I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
So, last week was the Oscars. And you know, I can boast that I saw three of the, what, 10 Oscar-nominated films. I saw Oppenheimer. I saw American Fiction. And I saw The Holdovers. And I have to say that of those three, Oppenheimer would not have been my choice for Best Picture.
Really?
I liked Oppenheimer. I just didn't think it was Best Picture. And it was one of those situations where I felt like Chris Nolan got Best Director and Best Picture because the Academy should have given it to him on an earlier film. Right. I mean, yeah. I feel like what was it? The Heath Ledger Batman movie, Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight.
Yeah. I really feel like that should have been his Oscar film because I do think that's a perfect movie. But boy, of those three, American Fiction, far and away, the better movie.
Really?
And I really enjoyed The Holdovers. I thought it was much more entertaining. And I understand Oppenheimer is, you know, it's a biopic, but, you know, you still need to be entertaining. And I just was not near. I liked Oppenheimer. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm just saying it's not as good as The Holdovers or American
Fiction. Still really want to see Oppenheimer and I want to see Barbie. And there were a lot of movies that came out around that time that I didn't see that I want to. But Oppenheimer was an event. I don't know another way to put it. I mean, it hit the world and people were talking about it in ways that movies don't really get talked about anymore.
Something that I object to about Oppenheimer is that while it's, what, three and a half hours long?
Something like that.
Yeah. It's a long movie. It's not shy on the length, that there's so much of the Los Alamos story that's not told. But I get it. You know, on the one hand, I'm irritated that they didn't tell some of the other stories. And on the other side, I recognize that they're telling the story not so much of the science, even though there's a little bit of science in it, and not so much of the discovery, even though there's a little bit of discovery in it. It's more about the man. And I have to say, that's not the interesting part of that story for me. I just didn't find it nearly as entertaining as it ought to be.
You know what's sad is I have not seen any of the Best Picture nominees. Now, don't get
really
me wrong.
You haven't even seen Oppenheimer. I just assumed you had.
Wow. I want to. I have Christopher Nolan issues. I
agree. His films are very distant. I feel like there's a big absence of warmth in his movies. Yeah. There are some things that I like a lot about the movie. Some of the writing is just fantastic. There is a scene where his wife, Oppenheimer's wife, is being deposed by the committee that's reviewing his security clearance, and the wordplay between her and the guy who's interrogating her is just fantastic. Again, the movie is just so distant, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to make a human connection in that movie. Even though Cillian Murphy disappears in the role, usually Cillian Murphy is a guy who you're like, oh, there's Cillian Murphy walking through this movie being Cillian Murphy. He disappears in it. I no dispute that he was best actor. I thought he was fantastic in the movie.
So I had no idea who was nominated for it, so I went out to look it up. I not only haven't seen any of those movies, I think I've only heard of two of them.
I've heard of all of them. But yeah, I want to see Oppenheimer. I just haven't yet. Same with Killers of the Flower Moon. Obviously,
I'm blown away
that
you've not seen either one of those movies, Paul.
I am too.
You're such a movie guy.
Honestly, what happens is the length of the films is restrictive, and so we talk about it.
Because you've got an old man bladder.
Well, I certainly didn't see either one in the movie theaters. I was going to wait till streaming for both of them, frankly. But then when streaming came, it was like they're both readily available. Killers of the Flower Moon on Apple Plus, Oppenheimer on Peacock. And then it's like we've just been busy, you know, in order to, because that's like a half day event, right?
Yeah.
To basically reserve the time to see a flick like that. And so, I mean, don't get me wrong, I've been to the movies, but I've prioritized kind of more fun entertainment.
Sure.
Than you know, the Oscar bait kind of stuff.
I definitely get that. And in my case, I haven't been to the theater.
We saw Kung Fu Panda 4, so, you know.
Yeah, I don't remember the last movie I saw in theater, but it was probably would have been like around the time The Flash came out.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I will tell you that American Fiction is, I know it sounds like it's medicine, you know, but it is a lot of fun. It's got a terrific sense of humor. And I mean, I spent a lot of time just laughing out loud in the movie theater. I thought that was just an excellent movie.
It's one of the ones I've never heard of.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. And first time film director. The movie is superbly directed. I just love that movie upside and down. But I watched right before we started this morning, I finished watching the new Damsel film starring Millie Bobby Brown on Netflix. How's that? It was fantastic.
I've heard people either love it or hate it.
I saw all kinds of garbage online just hating all over this movie. And, you know, there are a couple of things that, you know, kind of I was like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But I was thoroughly entertained, and my reluctance to watch it is that I'm used to seeing Millie Bobby Brown play a pre-adolescent teenager, right? You know, playing a pre-pubescent teenager. Well, she plays a woman in this, and she emerges as an action star. I was like, I am eager to see what Millie Bobby Brown does, you know, in a commando style movie. I want to see her, you know, shooting her submachine gun with the bandolier across her chest going, get in the chopper, you know.
I have no idea what this movie is or what it's about.
The setup is it's like a fairy tale, you know, princess gets betrothed in an arranged marriage to her realm is poor, like practically starving during the winter, and there's an arranged marriage and with a huge dowry that will support their land through the next two winters kind of deal. And she goes to, you know, the very successful realm to marry the prince, and turns out she winds up being sacrificed to the dragon, and hijinks ensue. And I just really dug the movie. I thought it was great. I highly recommend it. It's not a perfect movie, deeply entertaining. So, and the special effects were really good. I mean, I was like, wow, I'm really surprised at how well this is produced, given that it's a straight to streaming movie.
I'll have to check it out.
It was good.
I am flying out of town for work. I mean, short flights, only 2-hour flights this week. But I always try to find something to watch. And I'm torn between Gangs of London. They're very similar. Gangs of London, which is a crime drama on, I think, AMC Plus, or The Gentleman, which is the new Guy Ritchie TV show on Netflix.
I saw that. That's a TV show. It's not a film.
Correct. Which annoys me. I wish everything wasn't a damn TV show. Like, I wish there was some way to. Hey, do we need 8 episodes for everything? Can we just have a 2-hour flick?
Right.
Yeah, the only thing I've watched lately is I got caught up on The Bad Batch last night and was very disappointed that I got caught up and that all the episodes hadn't been released yet. Because it meant I now have to wait for another. I have a feeling there's only like 1 or 2 more episodes, but.
Well, guys, I know we're talking about Netflix and streaming shows.
You know why we're talking about all of this, Paul?
Because it was a light comic week?
Because comics have stunk lately. That's why.
Yeah.
We're gonna become golden streaming with Aaron and Polly. I'm just saying. We talked about that last week. I'm gonna make it a thing. Goldenstreaming.com with Aaron and Polly.
I look forward to the AI generated art for that one.
Well, and you know, just like Pornhub, the state of Texas will require an age verification to access the site.
You know, I have a confession to make, gentlemen.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, we've made it very clear. We're all middle-aged men here on this podcast. And I don't know about you guys, but I have a relatively, over the last, I would say, 6 months, my morning routine has become much more complicated. So like I used to just be like literally a bar of soap and shampoo, a little bit of hair product, I'm set. Oh, and deodorant, obviously.
Thank you. We all appreciate that.
Yeah. And I'm set. That's it. Like if I pack, I could, you know, for a trip, I literally just need like a little bag with a couple of things. But, you know, over the last 6 months, you know, now I have to take blood pressure medication. now I've got, you know, this like super powered toothbrush and water pick thing that I have to use. And it's like it's just become unraveled over the last 6 months of me getting older. And
you've crossed a line.
I crossed a line. I went to the dentist once and they're like, your blood pressure is awfully high. You need to see a doctor.
When did this happen, by the way, that dentists take your blood pressure?
I don't know.
I'm not a fan of it. And I'm like, the fuck is this? I don't get it.
They're like, your blood pressure is really high. I'm like, yeah, I'm at the dentist. They're like, no. It's more than just normal dentist blood. It's higher than that.
Yeah. Oh, in my case, when it comes to dentist blood pressure, it goes through the roof. Like I had to measure my blood pressure at home throughout a week to show them that that wasn't the normal rate. And even going to a regular doctor, it jumps up some, but it's not like that. Going to a dentist when I was
it's another level.
It really was. Yeah. It was like a huge jump, but I had to prove to them that was the case because they didn't want to do my wisdom teeth when I was in for that.
Oh, God. So, unfortunately, late last week, The Rock. You guys know I'm a big fan of The Rock. If Tim was here, we would be loving on The Rock.
But The Rock's a heel now.
He's a heel now, but I still love him, and I actually love that he's back in WrestleMania in wrestling as a heel. Not that he's actually wrestled, but he's there.
He will in a few weeks.
He will at WrestleMania. But he announced that he has now a skincare line.
I saw that.
Available at Target. Nothing's more expensive than $9.99. And you guys know I'm a sucker for a celebrity endorsement or a celebrity product, I should say. Not so much an endorsement, but a product.
Right.
Like The Rock has his own tequila and I actually love that tequila, or Mark Wahlberg has his clothing company and I wear a lot of that clothing.
You also get a lot of those Mark Wahlberg hamburgers.
They don't sell them locally or I would. But you know, he announced a skincare line and I'm like, oh, let me try. You know, I was gonna, you know, they have bar soap and shampoo and conditioner and deodorant. So I picked up some of that stuff. And then they said, hey, we have this facial care line as well. And, you know, he was very excited to talk about his facial care line. He's like, and so I was like, you know what? Let me give it a shot. So now I have added, on top of everything that I've already added, I've now added to my morning routine a hydrating facial cleanser, a restoring facial moisturizer, a rejuvenating toner, and I don't know, some type of eye thing that you rub under your eye. What is it called? Awakening eye gel. And we'll see. I hope
Paul's
it makes me look
be
20
so
years younger.
Pretty.
I am going to be
so pretty.
You guys are going to wish this was a video podcast.
Yeah. We're going to have you twirl around with your parasol and, you know, talk about how pretty that Paulie is.
That's what I'm going to do.
Right. You know my morning routine on a weekday.
Poop. Leave.
I don't leave because I work from home.
Oh, well, there's
it's just pooping.
I know. I actually don't poop first thing in the morning. I get up. I bitch about being up. I walk to the bathroom, make sure that my hair looks presentable, swap on a new shirt, hop on the first video call of the meeting. At some point during the day, I step away to do an actual morning routine, but it's not when I wake up.
Welcome to middle age with Aaron Pauly and Wayne.
Along the lines of your, you know, loving a celebrity endorsement or, you know, celebrity product, I was, you know, tooling through my Instagram feed. And you know how Instagram throws ads at you and you know, they insert them in your reels and whatnot. So here pops Kelly Clarkson and she's talking about some weight loss thing. And she's, you know, you all know that I've lost a lot of weight and yada, yada. And the next thing I know, it's like everything in my feed is about this Shark Tank weight loss formula with all of these videos from Mark Cuban and others on Shark Tank telling me that I can lose 35 pounds in 4 weeks. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And so I'm like, did I search on something? You know, did it hear me say something? And all I can think is that Instagram thinks I'm fat. That's all I can think of. And I think
well, Instagram sees you. So well,
and it
you post a picture to Instagram. Instagram's like, targeted ad.
So mean. That is the meanest thing you may have ever said. Wow.
You know I don't mean it.
I may have to quit this show. But you know, I was telling my wife, I'm like, I don't know what happened. Is it because I Googled dinner one too many times? Yeah. This guy's Googling dinner at 8 o'clock in the morning. Maybe he's a little too focused on food. But no, Paul just says it looked at me. Fuck you, Paul. Fuck you. All right. Well, I'm hearing my microphone so I can cry for a little bit.
Well, you don't. Well, let me turn it around, Aaron, because while we talk about things that we love, it was also announced earlier this week that Marvel is investing in this Micronauts thing. Mm-hmm. That in addition to Micronauts, the original Marvel Years Omnibus Volume 1 coming out in April, they will be celebrating with Micronauts variant covers on some of their main titles, X-Men, Avengers, Deadpool, Spider-Man, and Venom.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. You know, we have talked previously on the show that it feels like that Marvel's getting back in the Micronauts business. And I don't know if that is, you know, simply maybe they'll release some additional original Micronauts content. But
I can't imagine you'd go into the point of doing variant covers unless you were going to do that. Like, just release the omnibus. Like,
yeah.
But like, you know, the variant covers feels like a sign.
I think so, too. I think the variant covers is more consciousness raising about the property. Because here's the thing is, I love the Micronauts. This hit me right between the eyes when it first came out. It was, you know, Paul, you and I read that first issue together.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. The first 12 issues are just sublime. But I understand it's a niche audience, right? I mean, it's a certain age of folks who are interested in this property. So seeing them do these variant covers really suggests to me that maybe we're going to see some more original content. I really hope that's true. I would just love to live back in that universe. But I gotta say, I'm not really dazzled by the variant covers.
Nor am I.
Sadly. I really didn't feel like any of them were exceptional. The closest one is the Venom cover, because that's just really kind of a badass Baron Karza in the background, and I love the Biotron and Bug and, you know, Commander Ron and et cetera. I mean, it's all really cool, but I really feel like if you were going to make a statement on one of these variant covers, you'd have gotten Michael Golden to draw one.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, I got my confirmation, I think this week or last, that my Micronauts omnibus for $100 and some dollars will be here like April 16th. So
this is the year of the Marvel omnibus for us, between that and the two DC Marvel ones.
And the ROM omnibus as well.
Oh, that's right.
Because I plan on doing that one. Though I'm going to see, I'm hopeful that they'll release them digitally. Because I'd rather just have the ROM omnibus digitally, but I gotta have a physical Micronauts book.
It's funny. I feel like I'm spending a lot of money on things that I enjoyed 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I also recently pre-ordered James Cameron is releasing The Abyss in 4K, he supervised the whatever, what do you call that? Of The Abyss to 4K with new special features and stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, I mean, I feel like I got to get that.
Rescan.
Yeah.
I saw that they were going to do a theatrical on that new.
I think they are. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm highly interested in that. I love The Abyss.
Yeah. That one definitely stands the test of time.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, speaking of things that we love from many, many years ago, it is hard for me to believe that my favorite run of Green Arrow, the one kicked off by Kevin Smith and then, you know, Brad Meltzer wrote on it and Judd Winnick, that run is over 20 years old.
Wow.
I mean,
the Quiver storyline, I think.
Yeah. Quiver is where it started. And I've read through the Kevin Smith books, the Brad Meltzer books, and now I'm into the Jed Winnick stage of it. And I just love that story. It is one of my favorite stories, much less favorite Green Arrow story. And it really holds up. You know, you can really see Phil Hester growing as an artist, you know, from when he started with Kevin Smith to, you know, his later issues. I really dig it. And, you know, I just smile every time I think about it because I own an original piece of Phil Hester artwork that you were there when I bought, Paul.
I was.
Yeah.
I loved that run so much. It made me really care about Green Arrow and go back and read some of the earlier things.
I will say, between Daredevil and Green Arrow, Kevin Smith genuinely had some great comic writing.
He did.
Yeah, it's just when he quit actually, you know, finishing his work that it got to be a problem.
Well, you know, the knock on that original Green Arrow story was one that the knock on that was that it was too talky. You know, that's what critics were saying. It's too talky. There's not enough going on here. And that it was too inside baseball because it was deeply mired in DC continuity.
Yeah.
And I loved both of those things.
Yeah, in fact, those are things I loved about it.
Yeah, I loved that the characters could just talk to one another. And I loved that it fit within the continuity. And that's, I mean, I really think that is an example that other writers could learn from, that continuity is not your enemy, that you should embrace it because it really deepens the story. And here I am 20 years later and I'm going back and rereading this and I'm like, oh yeah. I mean, it's referencing Final Night. It's referencing Infinite Crisis. Crisis on Infinite Earths. I mean, it's referencing all these things that were just makes the world more rich.
Yeah. And the supporting characters were great too.
Yeah. Every single one of them. And Kevin Smith's new characters were great. Like, Onomatopoeia.
Onomatopoeia. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, who he also had over in his Batman run. I mean, I love Onomatopoeia. And then I think it's I can't remember if it's Brad Meltzer or Jed Winnick who brings in Drakon, the assassin.
Oh, yeah. And I think that was Winnick.
I love these new characters that they create whole cloth. And then seeing, Green Arrow fight, you know, the Riddler. Was also great because it was in that zone of the Riddler where the Riddler was really interesting. I don't find him quite so interesting anymore. But back in that run, hopping across the Batman books and the Green Arrow books, I really enjoyed the Riddler. It led into that, you know, Detective Riddler series, you know, books that we got to enjoy. It's a time in comics that I very much appreciate, and it is certainly a run of comics that I can highly recommend to anybody. I just think those books hold up so well, and that'll be my big recommendation given the quality of books that we've read over the last couple of weeks.
And I very much miss Brad Meltzer and Judd Winnick doing regular comics. Those guys have voices. You know, there were distinct voices. I mean, kind of like Bendis, but I miss good Bendis, but like,
right.
There are some writers who have a distinct Bendis. Voice, but not bad Bendis. And Judd Winnick and Brad Meltzer definitely had a feel to their books that I miss in modern comics.
And that's what's got me excited about Ghost Machine, because Meltzer's coming back to write for Ghost Machine. So I've got my fingers crossed that's awesome.
Well, you know, speaking of things that are coming back, even though they didn't really go away. In fact, they're actively still publishing X-Men books, but we know that the Krakoa age of X-Men is coming to an end. And it was announced earlier this week in South by Southwest, Marvel announced what's coming next for Marvel's line of X-Men comics. Now that the Krakoa age is done, they will be publishing I don't think it's not like rebooting, but they're having a new beginning for X-Men. It's going to be three books to start: Uncanny X-Men by Gail Simone and David Marquez, X-Men by Jed McKay, who writes Doctor Strange, and Ryan Stegman, and Exceptional X-Men by Eve Ewing and Carmen Carnero.
Yep. Each book has a different theme to it that's supposed to represent different eras of X-Men. So one of them, The team that is led by Rogue, based out of New Orleans, is supposed to represent kind of the nostalgia superhero era. Yeah. One of the teams is supposed to represent the young era, teaching new mutants,
yeah, that's exceptional,
powers and such. And then the core one are the heavy hitting team that are kind of more that mid era of X-Men trying to, you know, find a place in the world.
Yeah. So it sounds like Krakoa will end with the X-Men, you know, kind of on the outs with society again, society scared of mutants again, and all that stuff. So I'm looking forward to, I will say I'm going to give all three a shot. They come out this July. Well, it starts in July with the Jed McKay, Ryan Stegman, yeah, X-Men, which is your, that's the one, that's your heavy hitters, right? That's like Cyclops, Juggernaut, yeah, Magneto, et cetera.
July, August, and September are when these books come out. There's a month between each of them.
Yeah. So, you know, and then, of course, they're already saying, but more is coming, including Phoenix, X-Factor, yeah, Storm, NYX, X-Force, and Wolverine. I'm like, just give me a few months. Like, you got to publish a Wolverine title. That's fine. But
I would love for them to streamline for a year and, yeah, just have two or three X-Men books, because that's doable. What, the thing that always runs me off the X-Men books is all the fucking X-Men books.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I know Wayne doesn't care for the Krakoa storyline, but I was really enjoying that. And then it just became everything everywhere all at once. And I was like, okay, I'm out.
But now Wayne's the only one reading it.
Yeah, right. Because I'm reading the fall of the Krakoa Age.
You're like, fuck this Krakoa Age.
What I enjoy about this approach they're doing is that each of these books are entirely separate. These are three teams that are not working together, are not in communication with each other. So you can read the first issue of each, decide which title you like, and not have to worry about crossover for a little while at least. Because you know they'll cross over.
I will say that that was how they started the Krakoa Age, that mm-hmm. each one of the titles was independent. And you could do that, and then all of a sudden they weren't. And that's where it always falls down for me. I mean, since Chris Claremont was writing back in the 90s, that's where it's been a problem for me. And I'm always enjoying it, and then it's just too much. I mean, it's like you can be a comic book fan and have a wide cross-section of tastes and read a whole bunch of different titles, or you can be an X-Men fan and read only X-Men.
So I'm going to sound like a bit of a prude here, but we saw the images of the new teams.
Mm-hmm.
And what really stood out to me is Jubilee's new costume. I think of Jubilee as of the like X-Men 97 cartoon.
Right.
As like the little kid. And then there she is on the cover with not just like exposed midriff. She's wearing tiny little shorty shorts with like huge leg exposure. And it's like, I have never seen this character showing that much skin. And I think of her as this little kid.
Put on some clothing, young lady.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Doesn't she have a baby? A child?
I think so.
Don't I
it was
that?
Adopted, though.
Oh.
Well, okay.
I don't know what happened with that child after she was no longer a vampire.
Okay.
Because she had the child while she was a vampire.
As you do.
Yeah.
I know she's not a vampire anymore. They did away with that somehow.
Well, I think, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to give X-Men a shot when it comes back, at least those first three titles. And I'm sure within 6 months it'll lose me again.
Yeah.
But hopefully not. I love X-Men. So.
One of my problems with the X-Men, and it's really a problem that I have with a lot of comics, is when I jump out, and you know, and I don't jump out because of quality. I jump out because there's just too many damn books.
Yeah.
And when I want to come back, I can't figure out where to jump in.
I agree.
You know,
it always ends up being that way.
Yeah, and Comixology is terrible about, you know, connecting you to the right book.
Mm-hmm.
I like Audible, owned by the same company, does a much better job of that. Than
part one of the blah 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 series,
and giving you the proper reading order. I like, for instance, Green Arrow that I'm reading right now jumps around in the trades, and I mean, I had to like step back and go, okay, what's the proper reading order here?
And
I mean, it's impossible to find if you've bought, you know, individual print books, where to jump back in, like, you know, which trade or which, you know, issue comic. It's just super frustrating. And no, nobody wants to put a mark on the cover that says, you know, the reading order, because they're afraid of scaring off new readers. But you're scaring off old readers with disposable income.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, like this week's Amazing Spider-Man, one of the things I do like about Marvel now is that they have the legacy numbering as well as the new numbering. It's a little annoying because it also shows how much they've rebooted. Like this week's Amazing Spider-Man was issue 45, but Legacy issue 938.
Right.
But I do, I appreciate the Legacy numbering, or in the old Superman titles where they had the, like, here's the orders, the sheet. Yeah. Like this is, you know, little Superman symbol in the corner, one through, you know, whatever, you know, this is the order you're supposed to read these books.
Loved those.
Love that.
One thing I really appreciate about Spider-Man and how it changes over time, when I look at some of these other big books, I have a problem getting into Avengers, because it feels like when Avengers does one of these reboots and one of these new stories, it just, here's a new title and the new status quo. Without it feeling organic, it feels like everything you've just read doesn't matter anymore, and now here's the new storyline. Yeah. With Spider-Man, they take the time to actually tell a transition story before going into the new era.
Well, and I mean, that's kind of what we were talking about with the Green Arrow book from, you know, 2001. It took into account everything that came before. It respected the character's continuity. I think that increases the value of a story. It increases its shelf life. I think it makes it a lot more interesting. And a good writer can make it feel welcoming to a new readership, right? I mean, because keep in mind, back in 2001, Kevin Smith being on that title, that turned that title, Green Arrow, that was never a popular title ever for DC Comics, became a number two book. Yeah, not number two for DC, number two book against Marvel and, you know, all the other competitors, number two book. And it kept it there under Brad Meltzer and under Judd Winnick. Yeah. That book was huge, and it did all the things that we're talking about.
Yeah, my wife started reading it. And she's not a regular comic reader, but when Kevin Smith did his relaunch, she started reading a comic regularly as it came out.
Yeah,
I love it. But it does require a fan to be the writer. It has to be somebody who does their research. And, you know, one of the things that I do admire about Bendis is he does his research. You know, he will show you the picture of all the different trade paperbacks he's reading as he's going into a project.
Yeah, he may undo all of those things that you love.
He may disassemble that motherfucker. But yeah. But, you know, at least he's doing the research. He knows what he's doing, even though that wasn't evident with Superman. So
No, that was not.
So, Paul, this was my return to Spider-Man after leaving before Gang War.
Yeah.
And I figured it's a new storyline starting. I would jump in and see what the title looks like now. And I was left instead feeling like this was a transition issue.
It was.
But I enjoyed it. I mean,
yeah, it wasn't bad. You know, so it's funny because this issue was, it's written by regular writer Zeb Wells. The art, the guest artist was Carmen Carnero, who is the artist on the upcoming Exceptional X-Men. That I just mentioned. You know, so this is Gang War's over and Peter's tying up some loose ends, including the fact that Mary Jane's mother,
aunt.
I think, aunt, Mary Jane's yeah. aunt, Anna, aunt. Aunt Anna, is she, you know, she was infected with some type of thing from Krakoa and went insane.
Yep. So it tied in with the X-Men books that I've been reading, which I appreciated because it's the kind of tie-in that I miss Marvel doing, something happening in the larger world that impacted this book.
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily need to read all of those books. And it just shows that they're in the same world without being a direct tie-in.
Well, and so then I guess I didn't realize Mary Jane is a superhero now named Jackpot.
Yeah, I had to look that up, too, because that apparently happened after I dropped the book. She has a bracelet that she and Paul invented in this when they were in the other world that gives her random powers when she hits it. But if three skulls come up, she could die.
This feels stupid.
It really does.
Like, I don't know why she needed to be a superhero. I feel like Mary Jane was a strong enough character. You can write Mary Jane as a strong enough character without having to give her superpowers. I don't love that twist. I mean, I will say this issue was fine. you know, it's setting up a Sinister Six storyline, but I will tell you, for me, I really enjoyed Gang War. I don't feel like it fully stuck the landing. Part of that is probably that I wasn't reading all the tie-ins, but also the John Romita Jr. art. It didn't quite, if Gang War wrapped up, like, just kind of wrapped up, right? There wasn't, like, you know, any major death or revelation after such a big event that I was like, oh, okay, well, that made a big difference in the long run.
Yeah, I was.
But I enjoyed it.
As a longtime Spider-Man reader, what surprised me was I was left going to Wikipedia after reading it. Because there were multiple things in this book that I'm looking through. It's like, I don't understand. And I only dropped out for one storyline, really.
Yeah.
But, like, Mary Jane becoming Jackpot, who this new guy is that is bonded with the original Flint Marko Sandman.
Yeah, I don't know who that is
either. I had no idea who this guy was or what his reaction was. I kind of like the character, seeing him here, but... Yeah, I had to go look that up because, like, I had no idea.
Now, I'll say, after reading this issue, I think I'm out again on Amazing Spider-Man. I enjoyed Gang War, but I enjoyed Spectacular Spider-Men. We talked about that last week.
Yes, I love that book.
So I think what I will do is, if I want my Spider-Man fix, I'll get it via that book. I will say one of the things they talked about on the letters page of this Amazing Spider-Man issue is that next week there is a one-shot called Web of Spider-Man. That comes out next week. That's going to preview the storylines of all the Spider-Man titles for the coming year. So I will probably pick that up, but I don't know that I'm going to continue with Zeb Wells' Amazing Spider-Man book. It's just too inconsistent. And this issue was fine, but I will say it was, to your point, it was a transitional issue, which is fine, but it was kind of boring for me. Yeah.
I so jumped off good. For a reason. I wasn't enjoying what I was reading anymore. This issue I enjoyed, but it was a transition, so I don't feel like I can judge it yet.
Yeah, plus I've got Ultimate Spider-Man, which I'm loving also. So I'm getting my Spider-Man via alternative options right now.
I will definitely get Web and see what's in there and then decide if I want to give another issue or not based on that.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned Ultimate Spider-Man. I think I'm the only one who picked up Ultimate Black Panther this week. Now, it very much has the same, you know, it does feel heavily influenced by the movie, though obviously it's going off that quite a bit.
It didn't feel like it needed to be an Ultimate title. Like, it was just the same for the first issue. Mm-hmm. It was just the same character, and it didn't need an entirely new world to tell any of the stories they wanted to tell so far.
Yeah, but they introduced Storm in this issue. I actually quite liked issue two. I liked issue two more than I liked issue one. It felt like issue one literally felt like there was nothing in issue one that couldn't have been done in the context of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Issue two felt like, okay, now we're deviating a little bit more. You know, they talked a little bit more about the Fist of Khonshu and Moon Knight and how that, you know, and that's genuinely different than I expected it to be. I actually quite enjoyed Ultimate Black Panther issue two. So I'm on board for to continue probably through the first storyline. It's not the runaway hit or runaway, love that I had for Ultimate Spider-Man, but I enjoyed it. So I'm going to keep it going.
Well, I've got caught up on Action Comics last night. You know, Jason Aaron has, come over to DC Comics, and he's writing Superman in the pages of Action Comics on the heels of Philip Kennedy Johnson, who wrapped up his Action Comics run in January with the end of the Blue Earth saga. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, I did not totally enjoy the Philip Kennedy Johnson run. There were things I really liked, but it seemed like it was terribly uneven. And I feel bad because I feel like the reason why his Action Comics story ended in the annual was to make room for Jason Aaron. I feel like he got shuffled off the stage, and I feel bad for him for that. But I did not totally enjoy that run. There were things that just really made me grind my teeth relating to the storyline with Earth Al Ghul.
Yeah.
You know, with the daughter of the Huntress. Not Talia. Talia and Bruce Wayne, I guess. Anyway, alternate universe, bad guy. There were a lot of things there that I thought were cool. It just didn't work for me. Yeah. And one of the things that I found just really objectionable about the Philip Kennedy Johnson run, and I shouldn't blame this on him because he didn't write all of these stories, was the backup features. And, you know, they were really leaning into, you know, sort of the back when Action Comics, you know, was an anthology magazine. I think the last time I really experienced that was in the days of Action Comics Weekly. Back, I guess it was after the death of Superman.
Yeah, it was after the death of Superman.
And, you know, some of those work, a lot of them don't. And I feel like that's the case with the Action Comics backups that we had with Philip K. Johnson. And I'm like, I don't need a 42-page book. You know, if you can't give me the real story that I bought it for, you know, just... You know, let's just do a story. You know, I don't need it. I don't need it to be 42 pages with, you know, two different backups, particularly when the backups, I think it would be great to do those Action Comics backups with the rest of the Superman family. Right. But they had one, I think it was in the last one, his last regular monthly book with a Suicide Squad thing with Dreamer. And I'm like, can we just keep it tight on the Superman family? You've got all these terrific characters that we don't get to spend a lot of time with. Can't we do that? And you know, they did like a Jonathan Kent Superman story, and it was just him and his boyfriend, you know, texting each other, which I kind of hated, but I understood what they were going for. But you know, it just didn't work for me. But you know, that's the kind of story that I would prefer to see as backup, something to do with the Superman family. Well, Jason Aaron came in, and I just really love what he's doing. This is the best Bizarro story I've read in a while. It is legit scary. I loved this issue. And before I just wax on, I'd love to hear what you guys thought about it, because I thought the conclusion was really strong.
So reading the previous issue, as he's flying to Gotham for help, the first thought was obviously Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But they did the much more, what should have been the more obvious twist.
Uh-huh.
I really enjoyed the Superman and his buddy Joker story for this issue. The sane Joker that is the world's most sane man because he's a bizarro version of Joker,
right,
was something I never thought I needed, but yeah. I absolutely loved it.
It made you wanting more. It made you wanted to see like a four-issue spinoff of just, you know, Superman and the Joker, you know, saving the world. I got a huge kick out of it.
I have to say, this was not the easiest book for me to read because I started reading it while I was half asleep. Mm-hmm. And it is not it's a crazy book. I needed to reread the whole thing in the morning while I was wide awake and could give it proper attention, because you're dealing with Bizarro, you're dealing with Sane Joker. It is a bit insane itself as a book, but I really enjoyed it.
Paul.
Yeah, I will say I really liked this storyline. I liked the art on it.
Oh, yeah.
As art well.
Was terrific.
It was a lot of fun. So the art is by John Timms.
Mm-hmm.
Is the artist. I didn't 100% love the way it wrapped up, and perhaps to Wayne's point, maybe I should have read it when I was just a little bit more awake. I got it, but I was a little bit confused by, and part of that's just how chaotic it is.
Yeah.
You know, between, you know, with because in this three-issue storyline, Bizarro has used magic to basically turn Earth into Bizarro Earth when he dies. And as a result, you know, everyone on Earth has gone Bizarro crazy except Joker, who's gone sane, right? We've seen kind of some of this, you know, utilized in other storylines before. And Superman has been fighting back against it. And I loved the second issue. It's a three-issue story. I loved the second issue with Superman just literally wearing himself down in constant trying to protect people from themselves. Because people will literally like hop in a helicopter and crash it into a building because they're just crazy. And so I loved that part. And I loved the Sane Joker part. But then the internal struggle in Superman's head between him and Bizarro, I was just a little confused
same.
On the storytelling of that. I struggled a little bit with that, but overall, I really did like this story arc. I think it's a fun story arc. I think the core concept of Superman, you know, because this is Jason Aaron's first time really writing Superman. He's writing that Batman Off-World book for Batman, but this is his first time writing Superman. I think he gets the core concept of Superman really, really well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing I was left confused about on the story, when Superman untwists the magic, does it undo all the damage that was done? Does it undo the injuries that happened? Like, he went out of his way to keep people from dying, but people still got hurt.
Yeah.
So when they forget it all, do they wake up hurt and not know why?
I don't know. And we'll probably never find out, because this is very much this is, even though it's quote unquote in continuity, it's really not. You know, it was basically just Jason Aaron. You know, they wanted to bring Jason Aaron in to do a couple of things. This is very much a standalone story, because next issue, this goes into the big crossover between Action Comics and Superman for the next few months. We're going to be going through that. I shouldn't say going through. It's the House of Brainiac storyline. So Brainiac has unleashed Zarnians on Earth, and so it's, you know, the Super Family versus the Zarnians, and Brainiac is the big storyline, I think, for the next 3 months through these titles, which I'm looking forward to. I think it looks good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to House of Brainiac as well. I liked the ending. I like that there's a little piece of Bizarro shouting in Superman's mind, but Superman just doesn't have time for it. We're laying the seeds for another story and perhaps maybe another Joker Superman team up. I thought the portrayal of Joker as a sane man, working with Superman and understanding what Superman's success will mean for him, was really meaningful. I just dug this book all over the place, and how hurtful it was for Superman for the entire world to hate him. You know, when he loves the world so much, you know, it's almost like Christ figure, you know, being rejected by everyone. I dug the book a lot.
And when he realizes Joker's doing a sacrifice that he's already known, I'd say the other thing that stood out at me besides the story, the ad in the back
for April.
April special. I am buying that.
Oh, yeah.
That comes out next week, actually.
Yeah. Is the apocalypse near? And it's all of DC's ape characters on the front. Yep. I am so on board for this.
And you got a little upskirt there with Congorilla, so I'm excited. Well, I thought the Jason Aaron Action Comics trilogy was terrific. I highly recommend it. When you know, if you haven't been picking it up, go grab it. It's a great self-contained.
It's worth checking out. And for anyone who's a longtime comic reader like me, it kind of gave me Emperor Joker vibes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's one of the things I really appreciated about it.
It's a good book. It's a good book. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, from I've already mentioned, the April special comes out next week from DC Comics. Mm-hmm. Also from DC Comics, we get the newest issues of Nightwing. You know, Tom Taylor is building up to the end of his run on Nightwing. The latest issue of Wonder Woman, which is not worth it for the main storyline, but you've got some Trinity stuff in the back matter. That's good. The 6th of 8th issue of Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. Superman number 12, which wraps up the first storyline leading up to House of Brainiac. And you also have Batman Superman World's Finest issue 25 from Mark Waid and Dan Mora and Steve Pugh. We haven't talked a lot about this title. I think, Aaron, you've been reading it off, in trade.
I have.
I have not, I didn't love the first arc, so I never really continued with it, but I'm going to check out issue 25.
I picked up everything, the second trade forward, and it's fantastic. It is so good. I can't get over what a poor foot they got off with in the first story arc, because I think all three of us went, yeah. And, here we are, three guys who are like, point your Superman book at me. I'm your audience.
And Mark Waid, point your Mark Waid Superman book directly at
me. And your Dan Mora, for crying out loud. I mean, this we were built to enjoy this story, and everything after the first story arc has been phenomenal. I love the book, so I will be picking that up as well.
Well, and if you're a Comixology Unlimited member, the first story arc is the first trade paperback is included with your Comixology Unlimited membership, mm-hmm. and the second arc is only $4.49. The second trade paperback. So I will.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm gonna work on getting caught up, but I'm definitely interested in issue 25. So I'll be picking up issue 25.
Very good.
From Image Comics, we have the latest issue of Cobra Commander, which I'm very excited to talk about. We have really been loving the G.I. Joe and Transformer stuff from Image Comics.
Do you know how many issues that miniseries is?
I don't know. If I had a guess, I'd say 6. Because okay. They've already announced that Destro and Scarlet are the next round of miniseries coming from that universe. So I've got to imagine, if they're announcing that, that means they're coming up in solicits. So we're about 3 months away. So that kind of points me to thinking these are probably like 6-issue series, like Duke and Cobra Commander. But they have not really, that I've seen, announced a specific end date for those books. And finally, from Marvel Comics, I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, Web of Spider-Man issue 1, which is, a one shot that is laying out the spider stories and characters for the rest of the year.
Seems like that would be something they'd release on New Comic Book Day. Or
you would think so. Yeah, you would think so. But I think they're trying to I think for New Comic Book Day, they're using to promote their big blood hunt. Crossover.
And Paul and I both said New Comic Book Day. We meant Free Comic Book Day.
Yes, but Free Comic Book Day. Yes. they're new and free.
And free. That's right. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. We want to know what you're going to buy next week. And, we'd love to know what book from 20 years ago you're reading right now.
Right.
Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comment on a show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X.
What a deal. Well, guys, I'm eager to hear what movies we're not watching next week as well. So, let's all get together and do this all over again next week.
So we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.